Talk Show.
Recorded live.
Connections alone don't validate a thesis unless those connections prove relevant. What if the pattern itself is the thesis? The connections are the point. Perhaps one can always find meaning in the pattern because meaning is the pattern. The pattern is the meaning. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah.
My name is Will Morgan, and today I'm with Douglas Bowles. It is the 17th of January, 2012, and I just read a quote from the Patternist, from his piece in the Sync book. So we're here today with Tihemba Toure.
Yes, great.
Please forgive for the technical difficulties. How are you doing, Ty?
I'm doing great, man. I'm loving 2012. Now live.
So I read that part, and I thought about it for a while because the pattern is the meaning, which is kind of an extension from the media quote by Matthew McLuhan.
Right, right.
Or media is the message. The message is the medium. The pattern is the meaning. Which, after thinking about it, I really, it's kind of insightful on how to use sync, in my opinion. Would you agree to that?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. And, I mean, it's also a great way to simplify this whole pattern mess. I mean, at least it has been for me. There's the great void mystery, you know, but then there's also some very simple, straightforward aspects, and this is one of those aspects that helped me kind of like snap my perspective into place as far as what it means for me.
The thing that I love about your whole career, it's funny to call it career, but I mean that's your whole time you've been doing the work that we do, you've got one word that kind of sums up everything within the pattern, the patternist. And the thing that I love about that is how within classical science, you know, they're looking for verifiable results, and so they're looking for a pattern, but it's the same thing in quantum science where instead of defining the state definitively, they're still looking for a pattern to see how things behave,
right.
Not necessarily right now, but generally speaking. Mm-hmm. And so I really think you're on to something.
Appreciate that.
Well, and I think it's cool because it's the attention to the pattern without putting any baggage on it. Like, you know, this is conspiracy. This is good pattern. This is bad pattern. It all has to do with the meaning, and like what meaning you put onto it. It's kind of like what Stefan Jablonski said. You know how you can make anything mean what you want it to mean, instead of getting stuck in like, you know, the dogmatic belief systems on what it actually means.
Right.
Has sync changed for you a lot since you started, Ty?
Constantly, man. Constantly changing. But at the same time, constantly still the same. I mean, that's one of the huge contradictions, not just in sync, but just in our reality. People always say the more things change, the more they stay the same. Sync makes sense for me because it changes, because it grows, because it is a reflection of different perspectives of different people, and you know, a statement about all of our different experiences of life in general and how they sync, how they match up. You know what I mean? How we can be completely different people as far as how we were raised, what type of drama we might have gone through in our families or with our friends that shape us into who we are. And, you know, just like Dr. Manhattan was talking about on Mars, you know, all the random occurrences that had to happen for each of us to be at this particular point that we are in life. How crazy all that is. But at the same time, you know, we see connections in one another and we sync up in certain places. You know, so on that note, you know, it's seeing the changes in sync is what makes it real. Whenever it starts to get stagnant and I'm not seeing change and I'm just seeing kind of the same symbols and the same confirmation, I really get kind of bored, you know. I get, you know, and it's tough for me to even say that because I really do get so much joy out of sync, and I never want to stifle anyone else's interest in it. But if it doesn't change, you know, part of my sort of lackadaisical, lazy hippie side comes out, and I'm like, oh, okay, well, there's another pattern. All right, nice. You know, so if I don't see an ideological change, I kind of leave it alone and hope that something will, you know, kind of smack me over the head soon. And it always does.
Is there a balance between personal sync and, like, on a wide scale? Because what I'm kind of feeling is that sync to you is about relating to others. So is there different levels to this? Is it kind of compartmentalized, or do you just?
I would say it is very compartmentalized, only because I make it that way. You know, it makes sense for me to compartmentalize it in my analysis. That's sort of my more scientific side. The need to compartmentalize, the need to categorize. There are some who study sync who just see all is all and the personal syncs and everything just flows together. And, you know, sometimes I'm able to get in that vibe. But in order for me to keep things as practical as I possibly can, I usually have to put things in these little boxes, you know, and I still have a general understanding of the connection of everything. But that's one of the reasons that I don't talk much about the syncs in my personal life.
Right.
And I mean, I feel like that is akin to me trying to explain a dream to you.
Yeah.
You know, it's I can do it, but I don't feel it is as effective as something that you can immediately recognize.
Wow, yeah, I agree. That's brain fodder.
No, I'm just thinking about that in terms of, I mean, because if the in is the out and the out is the in, it doesn't matter how you relate to the images on the cave wall, because it's kind of reflecting the same source. You know, and so this is kind of why we like stories and gravitate towards stories, because they abstract the kind of stuff that we need to think about or heal. You know what I mean? Where we're drawn to these stories that will push us through that transformative point, so that we can, you know, whatever blockage is in us, we're able to come to terms.
But I think that there is a difference, though. What's happening internally and what's happening externally?
Well, so I actually don't work that way. And so this is the thing as far as, you know, various sync heads go. Some people are all, you know, just current events. Some people are just movies. Like right now, Jake is just about birth, showing how connected these actors are with current birthdays to what's happening currently. But for me, I've always been more introspective, and I'm dealing with microcosms and how that connects to the larger macrocosm. You know, just seeing how my own personal life relates to the larger life, the larger events. Like,
we'll see. Okay. Okay.
The cruise ship.
I get what you're saying. I know what you're saying with, like, Jake, because I'm not too into birthday, but I respect, like, what he's doing because it's fucking spellbounding.
Right.
Everything's valid. I think this is interesting because he's showing how the now is always now, you know? So it's like each of us are doing our own little mapping, you know, fractal mapping.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Well, one thing I wanted to talk with Ty about was, like, Men in Black, because I had forgotten one of Ty's posts. I remember reading it, but when I was watching Keanu Reeves movies, or actually I was watching Jennifer Connelly movies, but I was thinking about Men in Black, and then I saw Keanu Reeves, and I saw his whole catalog of Men in Black, and then I realized Agent Smith and Will Smith, and I noticed all of his catalog of Men in Black. And then I realized Ty had seen the same thing.
Yep. yeah. That was, I believe that was from the Horace Heresy post.
Yeah.
About the fallen lie. Ego and I, and that was when the whole Black Star thing really started to solidify for me as far as like a viable sync symbol and something that broke apart from the image. It broke apart from the racial image that I had seen previously.
So you took like a local thing that went completely transcendent? Is that what
exactly.
I forget?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's interesting, the whole idea of the dark man or the dark father or the shadow has been expressed in different ways from different sync researchers. But that common theme of darkness, of shadow, of the yin-yang, that is the point in the Horace's Heresy post. That is the point where it transcended from something that I had previously seen as an issue of race, as far as black versus white, into dark versus light.
But see, that's because your personal point of view, though.
Right, exactly.
But I saw it from a different point of view, but we saw the same thing.
Yeah.
So it's like validation that the actual symbol exists. It was only our personal perception that changed the meaning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's how we see the world. You know, you can't avoid your personal perspective on whatever the synchronicity is. And that's why any issues that we have had in dealing with different personalities at the sinkhole and conflicts and whatnot, you know, we're always walking on eggshells, you know, and trying to be as political as possible, for lack of a better term, you know, because you can't really discount someone else's perspective on sync, you know, if there is truth in everything. But at the same time, on a very practical level, we got to work as a community, you know, it has to be effective. So that's one of the interesting dichotomies that I've noticed. And it just so happens that with all of us, our personal perspectives and our sync perspectives have started
mesh.
To, what's the word I want to use, have started to converge.
Mesh.
Yeah, have started to mesh, like, as over time, you know, and the shadow as is a great example of that, our different perspectives sort of, like, just different streams of consciousness, all still running parallel and all still on their own paths, but at the same time, we're like, oh, yeah, you see it. Oh, you see it too. Okay, you see that too. All right, cool. And, of course, we're influencing one another on the subconscious level and, you know, all that stuff. But like you said, confirmation, affirmation, reflection from someone else.
So then,
all right.
Go ahead. Seeing the same stuff is one thing, but then taking that into your own little programming and then speaking about meaning or something is kind of a different process. And so then you end up thinking about cosmology, which ends up thinking about like eschatology, which is, you know, like the point of the universe. You know, because the story at the heart of the universe kind of needs a beginning and an end. And so I'm curious about, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why there have been disagreements at the sinkhole is just the difference of trying to understand the point where, you know, what is individuation and what's the point of life, blah, blah, blah. I'm curious. We've talked about this a little bit, and we end up, you know, we have people talking about the fallen state of the universe and individuation and healing the universe, or we, you know, we kind of end up with people talking about that the universe isn't in a fallen state, and all you have to do is wake up. What are your feelings on this, Ty?
Oh man!
Sorry.
Oh man, yeah. This is actually that particular point. Of course, it being 2012 and all, that particular point has been on my mind a lot, as far as how I relate to people in general when it comes to sync. You know, what are the actual borders or barriers between what I believe and what you believe, what that means as far as this being the end of an age or the beginning of an age, you know, and what's different. I personally have come to the belief that the apocalypse has already happened.
Right.
That we are, in a sense, like trying to catch up. And this idea that essentially, you know, we are, you know, the same way that you take a photograph, you know, and it's always in the past, you know what I mean? The same way that if you look at anything, whatever the image that you see is technically in the past, because it takes however many nanoseconds for it to get to your brain and process it. So you never actually experience the now from a physiological standpoint. You're always catching up. Your brain is always processing what it is you see and making sense of it. You know, so I do believe that, you know, on a macro, micro sense, like on a very large scale, like we as a consciousness, as a community, have made this great shift. You know, and so we all feel it because we feel the now on a closer level than we actually experience it or see it. So, I feel like there's that connection and people are sort of like awakening to it. And so there's this, some people respond by going crazy and some people respond by being depressed and some people respond by, you know, just saying fuck it. But the idea that, you know, we are already there, and, you know, I sincerely do believe that there will be a point soon when we will be able to experience the now in a different way. Now, what that's going to be, I have no idea, and I really have no interest in trying to figure out what it might be or what it might look like. You know,
okay.
But, I mean, our experience, you know, take Twitter and Facebook, for example. You know what I mean? Our experience of the now has already changed in a lot of subtle ways that most people don't even pay any attention to. You know, the idea that you can post your thoughts to the world and get an instantaneous feedback. Like, I've had the strange experience of feeling like Facebook or Twitter is reading my mind.
Yeah.
You know, and I look at it, I've got a laptop, so it's like my robot is reading me, because I spend all the time in the world, like, in front of the screen, you know, and you have that, there's this experiment that some scientists did studying the brain and how it reacts and how quickly it reacts. And basically the idea was they put a dot on the screen, and when you click the dot, another dot would show up next to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what they would do is they would run that test on you, you know, 50 or 100 times. And then they would just, by a millisecond or two, you know, change how quickly the second dot pops up once you click the first dot. So that before it took 5 milliseconds for the second dot to show up as a reaction, they'd cut it down to 3 or cut it down to 1. And what happens is your brain starts to think that it is predicting when you're going to click. Because you get used to seeing it at 5 milliseconds. And once it's at 3 milliseconds, your brain actually thinks that it is beating you to the punch, that it's actually predicting that you're about to click, when it's really just closer. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like that's what's happening now with our experience with the world, with sync. You know what I mean? We're just...
So we're able to communicate the now closer to the physiologic process that happens in our brain.
Right. Right. So our experience...
You don't need 2 weeks on the Pony Express to get a letter to Aunt B.
Yes, exactly. So we're getting closer, and this whole idea of a singularity, you know, I mean, whatever that means, but getting closer to a truer experience of what the now actually feels like. And it's, you know...
They did these experiments where they were showing people... maybe horrible things or maybe sad things, and they were discovering that people had an emotional response 6 seconds before they were shown the picture, as if humans had some precog knowledge of what was coming.
Yeah.
But that would be a necessity, right? If, you know, like you said, physiologically, we're getting the message too late. Wouldn't our bodies have to adapt to a system that was coming at us quicker? We would have to be more instinctive on the information coming in.
Yeah.
So, like, we're going through an evolution where we're getting more fine-tuned, and our brains have to think less about the information we're getting.
Yes, most definitely. More thinking. I'm sorry, less thinking, more knowing.
Less thinking, more knowing.
Yeah, a friend of mine recently, his brother Zaid Malik, who's a hip-hop artist, who is one of those cats who, you know, he shoots straight from the hip whenever he gets a chance. He told me recently, he was like, look, man, you've done enough thinking for a few lifetimes. The way that you live your life, and he was speaking about, you know, he's speaking in general, but also being, like, specific to me. But he said, you know, the way you live your life, you have done enough actual thinking, like, enough cognitive activity for lifetimes. You know, right now you have enough thought stored up in your brain, enough processing to just act. You know, know, and
right.
we see that. You know, we see that where we have these instinctive subconscious feelings about something, and then we look back in hindsight and it's like, oh yeah, I knew that. I knew that was going to happen. You know, I didn't really have to think about it. I knew that person was going to screw me over. I knew it, you know. So it's like that, you know, physiological part becomes that much more interesting when you realize the power of the brain and you see films like Limitless and you think, you know what, maybe I don't have to think. You know, maybe I can just know. You know, there's still contemplation. There's still room for just thinking about, you know, your creative ideas or introspection. But as far as, you know, that whole predictive thing and us adapting, you know, our brain is capable of doing it right now. We can just, like, flip it on and just stop thinking so damn much. And our
well, that's the whole goal of freestyling, right?
Right, exactly. Exactly. That is the very concept behind freestyling. You know, less thinking, more knowing. It just
and
comes
then if,
from a space out there somewhere or in there somewhere, and then you look back on it and you're like, damn, you know, I did that? I said that?
Yeah, you get the punchline after you said it.
After, exactly.
This is like the ending of 2001, right? Turning the robot off.
Hmm.
Oh, the thinking part. Right, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
Getting all that machinery out of the way, you know, the robot, and then being pure being.
Ooh.
Stepping out of the spaceship. Oh, here's shit.
What's that?
That would work. That would work with even, like, Terminator and stuff. I mean, I always suspected it was about the actual machine, like the Internet. But the Internet's going to kill our machine. Like, it's going to kill our thinking. Oh, fuck, that sounds fucked up.
It's the machine begins to think for us. In a way, and I think that can show us that we don't need to think.
Oh, but people are going to have a problem with... No, wait. Because if you look at it from, like, what you said earlier, or, like, what Jennifer Palmer said, the machine is showing us that we have some precognition.
Mm-hmm.
With, you know, with Sync shows you that.
Yeah.
And then, like, having Twitter feed or Facebook read your thoughts shows you that. But people are going to have a problem with that. I mean, you know as well as I do that there's a certain amount of people who hear you say the machine's going to do our thinking for us, and they're going to get fucking pissed off.
There's the caretaker, the ego, the robot, and it's still going to have to do its job. But as far as this connection to the higher self, that's I think, and that's why it's threatening too, is because
yeah, no, I
we're moving out of the realm of survival and into living or being, you know.
Being.
Oh.
Right, and that's why it's threatening.
Right.
That's, yeah, it's definitely threatening to move from living and thinking and doing into being. You know, it's like, well, what the hell am I supposed to do with all this other stuff that I've been valuing for my entire life? You know what I mean? Like, are you serious? It's like telling people that to do away with the concept of money. It's like, what? No. There's no way I could possibly live my life without making paper money. Are you crazy? You know what I mean? And
wow, I think that's it. To return back to the, like, an earlier point about, you know, like, personal think and larger think, sometimes I think about how this psychological process that an individual undergoes, we as a species or a culture also are kind of going through that. And so, you know, part of the individual, you develop this survival mechanism when you're younger, and then you get to about 33 years old, and then all of a sudden everything, all the meaning kind of drains out because there's got to be more than just think as a culture, or even as a species, maybe we're there. Maybe it's the West, like a Western idea. But you can see it with Occupy Wall Street, where, and like what you said, Ty, with money, there's got to be more than just this basic survival, because this is not enough. And we're attacking that.
Well, basic survival could be, you know, it could be whittled down to the shadow. See, things that we're unconscious about, as far as like Freud said, with competition and the opposite sex, all of that's survival. How much time do we got left, Doug?
We got about 12 minutes.
Wow.
Okay, we got plenty of time to stretch. Huh.
So,
all right.
Since we have the patternist on the phone, I need to get him to go on the record about Rihanna and last year and why she completely exploded.
About Rihanna.
Because I think she was the world's soul. She was the mask of God. I don't know why. I was completely captivated by her all year.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, are we talking specifically about the domestic abuse situation?
No, I'm just talking about how her whole career seemed to explode last year. But maybe it comes out of the domestic abuse thing. I don't know.
the whole Rihanna thing, it's so amazing how media, if you're paying attention to the thing, media will just give you exactly what you want. It'll give you exactly what you're looking for, you know, and that goes back to the whole reflection of self thing. But, you know, you'll see a movie poster about something you're writing about, and it's like, yes, exactly. That is what happened with me studying Rihanna. And actually, Beyonce, to a lesser degree, I had to do more searching. I just like looking at Beyonce more, so I was more interested. But with Rihanna, her whole thing was Good Girl Gone Bad. You know, that was the name of the album. And that idea, I had already been playing around with the idea of duality in the sacred feminine, the good girl, bad girl. And here we have this sort of virginal, you know, doe-eyed, you know, smooth-voiced singer who comes on the scene, named Rihanna, who's, you know, sort of a sex symbol, but still pretty covered up and, you know, nice and doing songs about going out and having a good time at the club and partying and dancing. And I think her first album was called, like, Music of the Sun. You know, so it was all great and lovely and beautiful. And then she puts out Good Girl Gone Bad. And we see this transition, you know, which a lot of people saw as the descent into darkness and her selling her soul and, you know, the Illuminati and, you know, evil. And, you know, this was coming about at the same time that I was working on Wonderland and
right.
The idea of the dream and that whole perspective of Good Girl Gone Bad to me was a reflection of this larger idea of, for lack of a better term, the woman's role, the woman's place in the dichotomy, and how, you know, for however many thousands of years, the image of the woman, because, you know, the society has been patriarchal, the image of the woman has been softer and meek and weaker in a sense. You know, this beautiful flower, that's a woman, you know what I mean? As woman is coming into her own and her identity is, her sort of cosmic identity is pushing back against that imbalance, pushing back against the demiurge concept. But as that's happening, there's this overcompensation of like estrogen energy. You know what I mean? And her whole thing to me is like a symbol of that. It's like this explosion of feminine energy. And the whole darkness of it is that shadow coming out to light, you know. So it looks like evil, it looks like darkness, it looks like something dirty, and you know, that undercurrent, you know. But that's that, it's sort of like coming free, you know what I mean? She's able to do these certain things and be a representative for the darkness, for the shadow of the woman, as opposed to the light. And just, it was just a beautiful contrast for her to come out and be this one particular, you know, virginal figure, and then make this completely public transition, which was also a statement on the internet and pop culture and how celebrity itself has changed. You know, I tweeted yesterday that Twitter killed the celebrity.
Right. It made us all stars.
It made us all stars. You know, that some of the, like, some of the most whack people I know on Twitter have these huge followings, you know what I mean? But it's just, it's that connection. You know, it's like, okay, you're not really bringing anything to the table here, you know, quoting things and being sassy, and whatever, you know what I mean? And you're a celebrity. And her story is one of the first stories that we saw, well, that I saw, of a star being brought crashing down to Earth, you know, pictures of her, this beautiful face, all over the internet with bruises, you know, these horrible stories, this, you know, crashing down. She's now relatable to all the other women who've been in domestic abuse problems. She's now, you know, this bearer.
I haven't thought about that larger narrative, how after that, her career has really shown how she has her own identity and independence, that she is, you know, she doesn't need anyone to speak for her. You know, she speaks for herself.
I mean, and not in, this is celebrity we're talking about still, you know what I mean? So it's still, the world's a stage is the concept. There's still that element of fakeness, you know, that I try to remember. There, that element, it's like when you're watching a movie and you see a sink, you know that every detail in that movie has been scrutinized. You know, they watch every second of the film. You know, when they're in the editing room, they're picking apart every scene, every shot. You know, if there's a chair in the room, somebody probably had to choose that chair out of 20 other chairs, you know what I mean, for it to fit in that scene. And the same thing with Rihanna and the whole celebrity thing. What we see in the media has been so carefully crafted and so handled that she, and it's the same thing with Obama, you know, she almost is, as a person, is removed from the equation. She is just a cog in this wheel, you know, in this giant, grander scheme of things that is based upon making more money and, you know, projecting a certain image and, you know, maintaining the mind control that the establishment needs to maintain to keep people buying things and to keep people,
propaganda.
Yeah, the propaganda, you know, the whole patriarchy thing where they have to have a female character out who's always being sexy and who's slim and in shape, and, you know, so all those other elements, and she just becomes a piece in that puzzle.
Well, speaking of which, Maya got fat. But you know, I've seen a lot about, like, the black man being feminized.
Mm, yes.
And also you wrote about the black man always having a white opposite or, like, a white anchor.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that they're trying to mold perception of the black community through propaganda?
Well, as I wrote in that article, you know, the perception of the black man has always been molded, you know, ever since the first Africans were brought here. There were just the most atrocious things that you can imagine that were done to make sure that the slaves did not have positive images of black men. You know, they were always put out there in front. We have the image of Roots, where Kuta Kinte is hung up, you know, as soon as he arrives at the plantation, he's hung up in front of all of the other slaves and told to renounce his own name. I mean, and that image, you know, that was done for them. That wasn't really done for him so much. That was done for the other slaves to see that this black man, you know, needed to change his name. And we see that reflected now in Barack Obama in 2008 when he's elected, and they hung him up in front of everybody and told him to renounce his pastor, Reverend Wright. You know, and he came back with the race speech and helped balance it out with a more perfect union, you know, which is sink in and of itself. But
or there's that that black professor who was arrested, and then Obama had a meeting with him and Biden and the cop.
Right. That was the beer summit. Right. Yeah, he sat down and had beer with the professor and with the police officer.
Right.
And everything was hunky-dory after that. Yeah.
Hunky-dory, that's 42 minutes. Let's take this call to Skype and talk on. But
all right. The pattern is that lifespot.com.